Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
Well, I'm doing great today, too. Thanks for asking. And we'd like to thank you all for tuning in. Today in the Voice of Yoga, we will talk about ceaseless prayer, where human awareness gives way to the divine truth and reveals the kingdom of heaven at hand. In this show, we will discuss some of the factors in receiving spiritual revelation and how to troubleshoot false mental concepts. Listen as we explore the teaching of Mary Baker Eddy by the application of inspiration and demonstration. To channel spirit, one must know themselves in the way they are known by the Creator. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. We are Talking Consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance to get the light in your soul and reflect the divine image and likeness. Swami, the title of today's show is Streaming the Divine Idea. I love that word, streaming. How do we use that in conjunction with the divine idea?
Yeah, we really want to reinforce this idea of sowing to the flesh as opposed to sowing to the spirit. Bernard Shaw wrote, "Those who can do, those who can't teach," which is an offspin of Aristotle saying, "Those who can do, do, and those who understand, teach." We did a show on teach to heal and heal to teach. These are ways of addressing the issues surrounding the letter of the truth and the spirit of the truth. And in today's show, we're going to focus on the spirit of the truth, which comes by receiving revelation. We focus on reasons why we are not demonstrating divine law with scientific certainty collectively.
Well, so I think that maybe the first thing we need to do is let's talk about the difference between the letter of the truth and the spirit of truth.
Yeah, the letter of the truth, in my opinion, is the concept, the theory. It's this idea of educating mortal mind up to spiritual apprehension. You need the mental landscape that supports the divine principle. This idea of streaming the divine idea. When we are hardwired to divine truth, we are receiving revelation. There's a whole dynamic with that we have to be educated about. What is it going to look like when I'm doing it? It's very easy to think you're spiritual, but remember, you're in the mind that can't bring forth the divine image. And so there's a practice that needs to be enlisted and a process that has to be initiated. This idea of going from belief to faith to understanding. Initially, we'd start with a belief in the divine creation. Then we also have to learn how to master the mind-body complex, because at some point, we must walk reason through the open door of revelation. Graduate from identifying ourselves mentally and materially, knowing ourselves spiritually. Without having spiritual identity, we have no rule to demonstrate the principle. Only reason walks through the open door of revelation. We have to develop this personal sense of self before we can surrender the personal sense of self and accept spiritual identity. Remember, Jesus rides into Jerusalem on the colt of an ass. Lao Tzu rides the bull. If we don't develop physical and mental capabilities, we won't have the capacity to be sensitive enough to hear the call and at the same time strong enough to walk a solitary path. What we learn is creation never reveals its secret to an unworthy opponent. So in order for us to qualify for receiving revelation, because the human nervous system would never withstand the higher voltage of this transpersonal experience to begin with. The spirit of the truth is the power of the divine principle. Without it, there's no power to what we're doing. So if all we understand is the letter of the truth and we're working with the mortal mind, we're at the same level as the law of karma, walking defenseless among these non-existent powers that will seem to kill you. They will only kill the false sense of existence, and that's exactly what we need to do while we have this physical body. Remember, soon it will be night when no one can work.
So, Swami, you're saying it's this mortal mind is one of the reasons why we are not and cannot demonstrate this divine law with scientific certainty.
Right. And that's why in the Bible it says repent, which translates correctly to mean think differently. Stop thinking with the corporeal senses and start knowing with the seven spiritual senses. But in order for us to do that, there's this turning that has to take place, this conversion where health in matter is now given up for health in spirit. This is a whole transformation we must initiate.
So I do have a curiosity to ask you about. When we talk about prayer, is prayer going to be one of those things that's going to help us with the spirit of truth?
Well, as we begin to understand the term prayer as instructed by Mary Baker Eddy and the term meditation in Kriya Yoga, we know there's a shift in consciousness which must accompany the experience because prayer really is communion with the divine. Life in matter is given up for life in spirit, or as Jesus said, born again of spirit. So let's look at some of the things which must be in place to do this successfully. We must know the difference between matter, mind, and spirit. The biggest obstacle in Kriya Yoga is avidya, ignorance, which is mistaking the impermanent for the permanent, the false for the real, the human for the divine, or what Mary Baker Eddy called the wolf in sheep's clothing, human good. False harmony. In Revelations, it's represented by looks like a lamb, speaks like a dragon. But how do we know what we are calling the divine idea has the ring of the true metal? And it's by the fruits. We use our experiences, what is appearing in our corporeal senses, to give us clues as to what we are conscious of. And here now, we practice inspiration and demonstration. Because if you are conscious of the divine creative principle, it must externalize in your experiences.
That externalizing our experience, that's what comes with demonstration.
One of the reasons, again, why I keep coming back to Christian Science, because Mary Baker Eddy puts healing on the table. Everything else seems to skirt it because it's not easy to do. It's a very detailed, intricate science, and you have to know it, just like building a website, computer science, just like fixing an automobile or building a computer. All of this stuff has procedure, and to know the truth that makes you free is way more complicated than Orthodox religion has even imagined it to be.
So I have a question for you. So in what we're calling this life we're living, what is it we are doing would be a telltale sign of avidya?
Well, I think the biggest and the most important would be the most shocking, which is persons, places, and things. This world. Orthodox religion seems to think God created this world. And that has become one of the biggest barriers to understanding the divine principle, belief in matter, belief in what is not the divine creation. This idea God is a mix of good and evil. Now you don't have a principle, but what you do have is a belief. You believe in what isn't under the jurisdiction of the divine creation. That is what violates spiritual law. The first commandment, I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not put strange gods before me. The minute we do this, we're metaphorically, symbolically, we're out of the Father's house. We're out of the divine consciousness. We're no longer under the protection of this law of life. And then, of course, we're using the testimony of the corporeal senses as our compass, which can't bring forth the divine image, so we're in the trap.
So you said earlier we have to know the difference between matter, mind, and spirit. So that, to me, matter is also what we call duality. Is that correct?
Right. It's very important to understand the principle of manifestation. In order for something to materialize, to come into form, it has to split from unity. In this splitting from unity, it manifests in half and then leaves behind the complementary unmanifested other part. And that was a way of representing reality with a trinity. And we visit these different dimensions every day. When consciousness is in the physical body, we experience the waking state. The waking state is dualistic. We know this because we have recollection from our experience with it. Because nothing is whole and it's in half, there's a point of departure. That contrast enables our senses to perceive what's before them. The next shift in consciousness is the dream state, when consciousness leaves the physical body, moves into the astral mental body, which is the complementary unmanifested other part. And we know it's dualistic because we have recollection from our experience with that dimension. Now, when consciousness leaves the astral mental body, moves into the causal spiritual body, this is the sleep from which we return, where we have no recollection. This is the regenerative, the restorative, dreamless state. And the reason we have no recollection from our experience with this dimension is because consciousness has returned to the unified state. So we have direct experience with the divine idea, but we're not conscious of it. And so we either believe in it or we learn to master the mind-body complex, activate spiritual sense, and then start streaming the divine idea, reflecting the image and likeness of the divine creation, as opposed to stuck in this belief in two powers and this cycle of death and rebirth.
So, Swami, let's talk about a saying that you always say, the physics of spirituality. Can you review that with our listeners?
Yeah, like attracts like. And if we identify with ourselves physically, we are basically using what is visible and tangible to produce a feeling in the mind-body complex that I'm okay. If we graduate from things visible and tangible and we move into, again, another dualistic source or resource, the whole realm of thought, which is invisible but tangible. And if we are using things invisible but tangible for validation, we have made a shift in consciousness, but we are still at the same level of consciousness. We're still under the government of duality. We still have a belief in two powers, and we're not free from this karmic law. But if we then rebirth the body in spirit, if we internalize that which is invisible and intangible in the physical body to be used as a symbol for validation. Now, we have changed the pattern of the body. In order to do that, you have to get rid of the quote-unquote original sin, the symbol that the physical body comes in with, what Mary Baker Eddy called animal magnetism. But you don't just kill the body. Remember, we want to ride it into Jerusalem. And so with the support of the body, you internalize the invisible, intangible omnipresence as your symbol for validation. The Bible calls this to love God. Most of us are looking for food, for mother, for approval, for validation. That keeps us in the trap. But the physics of it is like attracts like. It's like when you're born, you are carbon steel, and the outside world is a magnet. And so the pull is very strong for you to the outside world. And what we need to do is what they did with steel. They refined it. They turned that carbon steel into a non-magnetic stainless steel. And by enlisting strategies like skillful use of thought, skillful use of breath, skillful use of water, skillful use of food, skillful use of exercise, we refine the mind-body complex to make it a hospitable environment to invite the invisible, intangible omnipresence into consciousness.
We're going to pause right here to hear a word from our sponsor. So listeners, we'll be back with you in just a few moments.
Kriya Yoga Theory 1, Human Development and the 8 Essential Stages of Kriya Yoga. This program is a comprehensive course that will help you get your arms around the science of Kriya Yoga. It provides a clear understanding of the goals and objectives behind yoga, along with the physics of spirituality. It includes the practices, supportive concepts of Kriya Yoga, and the process in human development, apotheosis, the process of the human becoming divine. A complete guide on how to become a human in the adult state. Get the light in your soul and experience the simplicity and joy of union with the divine. This course is available in live classes at the ashram or online with 8 videos or 4 CDs. Visit our website, www.ipdtransform.com, for more information.
Welcome back. For those who are just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So Swami, maybe just to summarize what you were saying about like attracts like. So I think what you're saying is we cannot practice inspiration and demonstration while we're drawing from this outside world, which is fear, pride, limitation, so on.
Right. Like attracts like. If we draw from fear, pride, limitation, that's what we become. And we understand that now is duality. It's not the divine creation. But if we draw from truth and wholeness, if we are streaming the divine idea and we're connected to this invisible, intangible omnipresence, which is pure, powerful, and sacred, then we become absolute spirit. The outer world of sense and the inner world of spirit become one when divine truth is the only consciousness.
So up next, I think we have a soundbite here from Gilbert Carpenter we could play for our listeners.
Yeah, this is from their work, Mary Baker Eddy, Her Spiritual Footsteps, and I'll play it.
Chapter 17, Receiving Truth from the Divine Source. An interesting question grows out of the fact that the Old Testament records that the Lord rained manna from heaven for the children of Israel. Notwithstanding this fact, the Master plainly states that Moses gave them not that true bread from heaven. Which record is true? Surely, the spiritual inspiration and guidance that Moses received came down from heaven. Nevertheless, it was his demonstration that provided the manna for the others. Hence, to them it was an influx that came not through their own demonstration, but through that of Moses. Strictly speaking, it did not come down from heaven, but came through Moses, much as a healing in Christian Science does not come down from heaven to the patient directly, but comes indirectly through the thought of the practitioner. It is the difference between the light of the sun coming to earth directly or being reflected by the moon as a secondary light. Following the logic of this reasoning, we must conclude that Moses did not give them the true bread from heaven. In truth, no one can give another the true bread from heaven, since only that which is the fruit of one's individual demonstration is true bread from heaven, that which flows directly from God to man. Similarly, Mrs. Eddy demonstrated the true bread from heaven. She learned how to be taught of God and receive the influx of revelation directly from the divine mind. Although Mrs. Eddy has left this vast spiritual source for our partaking, yet, to us, it is not the true bread from heaven as long as we are content to feed on her inspiration. The bread that cometh down from heaven is our true bread when we gain the ability that Mrs. Eddy had and taught, namely, to reflect this inspiration directly from its divine source. One great difference between our leader and Moses was that, whereas Moses knew how to reflect this divine inpouring, he did not teach the method to others. Perhaps the reason for this oversight may be traced to Moses' inability to impart the process. Mrs. Eddy not only reflected this heavenly essence of good, but she recorded the rules for so doing that all who run may read and follow. It is one thing to drink of the living water furnished by one spiritually endowed, and another to gain for oneself the understanding of how to gain that living water. Yet, no one is a true Christian scientist until he makes this demonstration. No one can call himself Mrs. Eddy's true follower merely because he or she appreciates and partakes of the living water she has furnished. Go and do thou likewise is the demand of infinite love. Each pilgrim must go to the Father in order to do those greater works to which Jesus referred. Any branch church of Christ, scientist, will suffer a loss in spirituality if the membership permits itself to allow one spiritually minded student to carry the burden of demonstration. False peace may be the outward sign of this loss of demonstration, but such a situation stifles individual growth and is really the blind leading the blind, where the one who leads and those who follow are blind to the seriousness of the situation. One of the most vital things that the children of Israel should have been told was that simply following Moses did not make them the promised children. Yet, they were the most spiritually minded people on earth at that time. Only as they gained the understanding of how to draw their spiritual sustenance directly from divine mind could they claim to be the children of the promise. Still, the Master, by his request of the woman of Samaria at the well of Sychar, implied that another might go to the divine source and give him living water. He said, "Give me to drink." What a glad surprise and yet a shock it must have been to this member of a despised race to have had the Master, a Jew, one of the chosen race, thus call upon her for such service. But the Master knew that whatever comes from God can feed another, even if the latter might be the most spiritually endowed mortal on earth. Although Jesus recognized the spiritual possibility of everyone's going to the divine source and feeding another, he taught that the highest and most important demonstration is learning to draw from the well of inspiration for oneself. Christian science unfolds the fact that for one to harbor the self-depreciating thought of himself as a mortal, especially when that includes membership in a despised race, would be an effective barrier to his recognition of himself as a son of God. Thus, it was a true healing thought for Jesus to imply that she could perform a service for him. The drink of cool water was symbolic of the possibility of her being a channel to him for spiritual good. A realization of these facts would be an effective neutralizer to aid in restoring her spiritual amor propria. The possibility is evident of one who is spiritually advanced, reaching the point where he might feel that if he got into trouble, he would have difficulty finding another to help him. Such a situation might bring a feeling of isolation, as if at a time when thought became clouded, so that the student could not break through to. I speak of this because there were nights when our leader would call different members of her household to her room to help her, to give her to drink of the living water, to lift her out of a sense of depression and fear. Think how it affected us, thus to be called by the one we knew to be so spiritually great. We felt as the woman of Samaria must have, a glad surprise to be summoned, and yet a great consciousness of the spiritual distance that lay between the humble disciple and the one so spiritually advanced. Nevertheless, through scientific argument would come the restoration of her faith and trust. When a bird, accustomed to soar in the upper reaches of the air, flies by mistake into a narrow room, it becomes confused and fearful. It flies around and around the room, beating its wings against the walls in a vain search for liberty. Finally, it becomes so exhausted that it permits you to pick it up and release it through the open window. The moment it feels its accustomed freedom, its strength returns, and it wings its way skyward. Thus, thought that is accustomed to the spiritual freedom of right thinking becomes bewildered when it is forced into the narrow confines of the thought of self. In this manner, I would diagnose our leader's experience. When her thought was released from this unaccustomed sense of self, it would soar again into the spiritual reaches where it was at home. Through audible argument, we would assure her that because she was the servant of God and called of God to do his work, that God would take care of her, protect her, and hold her safe until that work was completed. We would assert that there was no power that could claim to stand before the power of God that filled all space, nor was here any delusion of fear that could rob her of the recognition that the all-pervading, all-sustaining consciousness of God was caring for all, especially those called according to his purpose. The metaphysician is accustomed to dwell in a consciousness of spiritual and mental freedom. When he loses that, his thought becomes bewildered in the narrow confines of fear and limitation. But the moment he is let out, he recognizes it and is all right. Such was our leader's experience. Hence, referring to the incident with the woman of Samaria, we perceive that Jesus disclosed the wonderful lesson that at any time in our human experience, no matter how far advanced we may be spiritually, we can receive help from God through those to whom we apply, and the humblest thought can be this channel, if, in some degree, it is spiritually attuned. Thus, like the Master, Mrs. Eddy was willing to ask spiritual drink of a humble one when she was spiritually thirsty. It is probable that the Master was not in need of a spiritual touch from this woman, but it was necessary that he ask her in order to set forth the lesson and thereby encourage the sweet and simple thought by revealing its possibilities as a channel for good.
So I mean, there seems to be a lot of things we can learn from what we just listened to. What are some of the major talking points you think that we should be thinking about?
Well, I like where he says, in truth, no one can give another the true bread from heaven, since only that which is the fruit of one's individual demonstration is true bread from heaven, that which flows directly from God to man. The other thing that I really found quite helpful is the Master knew that whatever comes from God can feed another, even if the latter might be the most spiritually endowed mortal on earth. And also this idea of the bird stuck in the room and how that affects us, because as we progress in this practice and we may have a glimmer of this truth, it's really nice to know you can turn to somebody who is spiritually endowed to try and help you, to help lift you or get you back into that. Or like what we had said, we teach to heal. If you don't have the benefit of somebody who can lift you into this realization, then you can, through the letter of truth, educate your thought up to spiritual apprehension, but you're still going to have to walk reason through the open door of revelation. And that's true even if somebody lifts you up to this certain point. Until you are streaming the divine idea, until you are connected to the divine principle and demonstrating divine law with scientific certainty, you at least want to know you haven't gone far enough, or you're not able to control how you're thinking, or there is a reason why we're not walking in the kingdom of heaven on earth.
That completes our show for today. So listeners, be sure to visit the website www.ipdtransform.com. On any of the pages, when you scroll down, you'll see several buttons there that you can press that will further your development. Swami, any final thoughts about today's program?
Well, I would like to encourage people to join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance, get the light in your soul, and reflect the divine image and likeness. Namaste.
And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton, along with Swami Jayananda, signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga realization. Namaste.